is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, March 3rd of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we talk with one of the country's leading experts on the public health effects of firearms. He says owning a gun increases your chances of dying from a gunshot by 100%. This time on the Cannabis Report, we'll hear about a new report from a well-known medical marijuana advocacy group that just gave Colorado a C-plus grade for the state's medical pot system. And food columnist John Lindorf will be in the Boulder studio this morning to catch us up on local food news. At the bottom of the hour, we have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. In today's edition, we'll revisit a recent Looks Like New program, which examines attempts to introduce the concept of fairness into computer algorithms. At 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, we'll start with local and regional headlines with Chiara DeMare.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency has agreed to fund removal of foundations, basements, and vehicle damages in the Marshall Fire. Congressman Joe Neguse, Senator Michael Bennett, and Senator John Hickenlooper requested the addition of the rarely funded coverage to the private property debris removal program. The foundations pose a health hazard, and steep demolition costs are stalling the rebuilding efforts of property owners. The same leaders yesterday requested a U.S. House and Senate committee to expand funding for a national disaster recovery program. The written request stated that Marshall Fire damages are expected to cost over $513 million. Lawmakers say money earmarked for nationwide disasters that occurred in 2020 and 2021 isn't enough to also cover the needs of the Marshall Fire victims. In related news, the town superior announced Wednesday that its water treatment plant has a temporary way to remove a smoky taste and odor from the tap water some residents have been reporting. Officials say a chlorine dioxide system has been installed as a short-term remedy. It will cost around $30,000 a month. The town hopes to find alternative methods for removing fire ash during the water treatment process. Colorado legislative aides will be receiving wage and hour increases. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Thanks to the Political Workers Guild of Colorado, legislative aides at the Capitol will now be employed full-time, working a 40-hour work week, and will be receiving a 25% raise from $16 an hour to $20 an hour. The Political Workers Guild of Colorado started in March of 2021 and is the first of its kind in the nation. The Guild represents the legislative aides who assist the state's House and state legislators at the Capitol in Denver. Some of the work that aides do for the legislators is to monitor pending legislation, conduct research, and drafting legislation. The Guild, which began with the Democratic legislative aides at the state capitol, has grown to nearly 100 dues-paying members from across the field of political workers. The Guild also represents campaign workers and political organizers. The Guild is also open to Republican legislative aides. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The University of Colorado has announced plans to liquidate its investments in Russian companies in protest of the Russian military invasion of Ukraine. CU officials say the university system's investments in publicly traded Russian companies are small, with less than 0.1% held in securities. Less than 0.25% is invested in mutual funds that have equity holdings in Russia. According to CU, Russia is also not funding any university research. Colorado Republicans have filed a lawsuit seeking to prevent unaffiliated voters from casting ballots in partisan primary elections. GOP leaders say Proposition 108 infringes on their First Amendment right to free speech and association because it allows non-Republicans to interfere with the candidate selection process. They also argue that the measure violates their right to equal protection under the 14th Amendment. Attorney John Eastman filed the suit. Eastman, a former CU Boulder visiting scholar, was stripped of public duties after speaking at a rally near the White House before the January 6th insurrection. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Wednesday that he's joining colleagues in a nationwide investigation into TikTok. Attorney generals across the country say the social media platform should not promote and provide its services to children and young adults because using it creates physical and mental harms. Attorneys are focusing on how TikTok gets young users to spend extra time on the platform. The bipartisan coalition is looking into whether TikTok violated consumer protection laws. The same coalition is also investigating Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook. A TikTok spokesperson says the company will provide information about how it protects the safety and privacy of teens. In today's weather, it should be another sunny day throughout the Front Range. In Boulder, a high near 72 with a low tonight around 37. In Denver, a high near 77 with lows in the upper 30s. And in Fort Collins, a high near 71 and a low around 34. Enjoy the sunny skies and warm temperature while you can, though. Rain is likely Friday night with the snow predicted for the weekend. Outside the Boulder studios, it's 43 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Gun sales have skyrocketed across the country since the start of the pandemic, and some would argue this is a public health crisis in itself. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Dr. Garen Wintemute, an emergency room physician and director of the University of California's Firearm Violence Research Center. He says gun sales dramatically increased at the start of 2020 and remained sky high for 2 years.
Over that two-year period, we had a more than 50% increase in gun purchasing over the levels expected given the performance of the five earlier years. Best estimate is that there were an excess of 15 million firearms purchased. That's not total. That's over what would be expected given the results of the prior 5 years.
So who is buying these guns?
The demographics of gun purchasing have been changing. The sorts of people who've bought guns before are continuing to buy, but increasingly new purchasers, and in particular, first-time purchasers, women, people of color, groups who wouldn't have been heavily represented among gun buyers in the past. And there's been a lot of speculation about why that's happening. But the bottom line is people buy guns for protection. If they think they're at risk, if they don't think the police are going to protect them, if they think the police might be the source of the violence from which they need protection, they might purchase a firearm. And the tragedy is that the technology is forever. Firearms are durable products. I might buy a firearm in response to a rise in crime in my city in year X. But 20 years later, that firearm is still in my home. Maybe my kid gets hold of it. The leading source of guns used in school shootings by children come from home. The leading source of guns used in mass shootings by kids are the home. It's the parents' gun.
So it's not just sales of guns. Gun deaths and gun violence have also gone up dramatically. Who are the people who are the victims?
So it's really important to answer that question with a broad understanding of what gun violence is. 60% of deaths from gun violence in the United States are self-inflicted. They're suicide. And a majority of the people who die from gun violence are quite non-Hispanic men. And this is particularly relevant to a state like Colorado, and for that matter, the Mountain West states in general, which have relatively low rates of interpersonal violence, firearm homicide, but have some of the highest rates of firearm suicide in the country. Whether we're looking at the population level or at the individual level, on balance, increased access to firearms is associated with an increased risk of death or injury from firearms. We know that from watching what happens with individual people as they acquire firearms. We did a study years ago showing that when people purchased firearm, risk of dying from firearm suicide was more than 50 times higher than it was in the general population. And it turned out that that was an underestimate. A better study came along just in the last couple of years and showed the risk is increased by a factor of more than 100. And it was still substantially increased at 5 years out. The thing we know about gun suicide is that most often it's an impulsive event. There's a life crisis, loss of a job, loss of a relationship, maybe too much to drink over that life crisis. And recourse is made to whatever weapon is at hand. If that weapon is a firearm, 90% of the time, almost, an attempt at suicide is going to have a fatal result. If there's no firearm, if I reach for a bottle of pills, 90% of the time, the outcome of that event is survival. So the technology makes a huge difference.
It's interesting because, you know, sometimes you wonder, are guns the symptom or are they the root cause of violence? But what you're saying is that it doesn't matter because they are so dangerous that they're changing the entire equation.
Yes. One of the myths about the United States is that we are somehow an inherently violent society. There's a lot of violence in our origin story. There's a lot of violence in the stories that define American character, the story of the cowboy, the story of the soldier. I get that. I grew up in that culture. But we are not inherently a more violent society. Our rates of assault are on a par with those of other wealthy industrialized societies. Our rates of homicide are off the, well, they say off the charts. You have to extend the chart to make room for our rate of homicide. The difference is we have access to a technology that changes the outcome.
Dr. Wintemute, thank you so much for talking with us.
A pleasure.
Dr. Garen Wintemute directs the University of California's Firearm Violence Research Center and is a physician at the University of California Davis Medical Center.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers, and as always, I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Always good to be here.
Okay, so this morning we are going to look at how well the state of Colorado is serving its medical marijuana patients, or how well they're not. I guess a new report looks into that, huh?
Yeah. Americans for Safe Access is a group now in its 20th year, and they've been instrumental in promoting, advocating for access to medical cannabis. And the group has been grading states on their approach to medical marijuana since 2014. So they've been grading all states since 2014, and they downgraded the state in its most recent study, mostly because of the recent law, HB 1317, which was passed last year, and that limits access to high-potency products. And the law was, it was kind of a compromise legislative effort. Parents groups wanted a limit on all THC products at first, but it wound up limiting the amount of product people can purchase and forcing patients 20 and under to get signatures from two doctors instead of one to get a medical card. And the law went into effect January 1st, so we don't really have any numbers or any way to say, I mean, it's only been 2 months to evaluate exactly what's going on. But critics have complained that the law restricts patients who rely on higher amounts of THC. There are patients who, you know, everybody's different, and it forces them to return to the dispensary, many of them almost every day. And so we'll find out more about that as we go along. But despite a C-plus grade, which is what the state got, Americans for Safe Access says that the state has a fair medical cannabis program. Earlier years, the state had gotten a B grade, and the people who do this, the people at Americans for Safe Access, they said that the group's methodology has changed more to a patient access approach, and that that might have something to do with why the state got downgraded. But no state received an A grade. Only two states, Maine and Illinois, got Bs, and Colorado was just in a bunch of other states, including California and Missouri, with C pluses. And it was critical of the new law's crackdown on THC products and suggested a repeal of that particular law. And it urged all states to pass laws that allow medical patients to use products when not working. This is something that's been a problem. We've talked about this before. And the group gave the state credit for changing the law that now allows school staff to give minors cannabis medical products instead of forcing the parents or someone else to come in every day. So, you know, state got good and bad. The report found overall patients gave the Colorado program favorable ratings, but many were dismayed at the passage of HB 1317 because many of them feel that's going to end the medical cannabis program as it exists. They worry about that, and that the state acts more favorably to the rec program because it provides more money.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about individual bits of legislation that get passed, either benefiting the medical marijuana market and patient or benefiting the recreational customer, and even thinking about legislators and states kind of favoring one or the other with each individual decision that they make.
Yeah, I'm always reminded of a day a few years ago when I asked a Colorado legislator, a state representative, how long it was going to take to get cannabis laws correct and, you know, the way that the state wanted them. And he reminded me that there were three bills that year that were devoted to alcohol sales. So I think it's going to be a while before we actually get it right or get it the way it wants. And the latest, I just read about this, thanks to a legislative error, many dispensaries in Colorado are operating illegally. Now, here's the story here. Selling medical marijuana and recreational marijuana both require separate state licenses in the state. There's about 575 of those that are permitted that sell both medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. And all of them are technically running afoul of the state's rules and out of compliance, not for their business practices, but for legislative oversight. So, you know, definitely going to take a while. Back in 2019, the state by law did a review of industry regulations. This was one of the things that happened when the state legalized, was that every few years you have to do a review of the industry regulations that merge some rules. And it left out the paragraph for dispensaries that serve both rec and med customers.
Just left out the paragraph.
Yeah, just left out the paragraph. Nobody's been harassed by the MED, Marijuana Enforcement Division, which is in charge of carrying out the legislator's wishes. But it needs new legislation in order to make that change. And Representatives Edie Hooten and Kevin Van Winkle have introduced a bill to restore the language. And I'm guessing that that one's probably going to be passed.
Stands to reason. Correct legislative error. Well, Leland, we always appreciate you keeping us in the loop. One step forward, maybe one occasional step back.
That's the way it is. That's the way it is with everything.
Well, you can stay in the loop about cannabis news here on KGNU by tuning in to the Cannabis Report the first and third Thursday of every month. Leland, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Hanalei Myers.
You can tell by the sound of Cab Calloway, it's time for Radio Nibbles and breaking local food news. John Lindorf joins me live in the studio. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon. It's a beautiful morning in Boulder and all along the Front Range. And today we just got a ton of food news, and it makes the case that, what can I say? This is a very cool place to live if you're into food. Tonight, the Boulder International Film Festival starts, and there's a bunch of food-related films that I'm looking forward to. One is Julia, a new documentary on Julia Child. Another showing tonight, actually, is Blind Ambition, which is about Zimbabwean refugees trying to become South Africa's top sommeliers. And there's a couple more, including two films about global food justice. The James Beard Awards are the Academy Awards of restaurants. And the semifinalist list just got announced. Most of the semifinalists never make it to the finals. But it's a big thing to be recognized as a semifinalist nationally. Locally, Edwin Zoe of Zoe Mama and Chimera in Boulder was in the category of Outstanding Restaurateur. Best new restaurant, surprisingly, Cajun Seafood in Lafayette that we've talked about. Best Chef Mountain States includes Eric Skokin of Black Cat Farm. The other thing was that the Good Food Awards were announced. This is like the Oscars of prepared food, okay? And the winners were amazing. Pasta Ficchio, a wonderful Boulder pasta company, took home an award along with Jai Mix, which makes Indian-oriented snacks. And there's a bunch of others, including Longmont's Table Mountain Farm. In the meantime, there's, you know, it's like the world is reopening back up, and all sorts of things are happening. There's a bunch of new restaurants that are either opened or opening. Rocky Mountain Tap and Garden, which is a restaurant and self-pour beer place, opened in Louisville. Urban Field Pizza and Market is getting ready to open in Longmont. And also in Longmont, there's going to be a restaurant opening soon. And the menu is built around chicken salad. Just chicken salad. I'm just saying, you know, you're thinking what I would like, you know, is
a chicken salad
restaurant.
Nowhere to go.
Right. But more importantly, Mason's Dumpling Shop, which is a wonderful Denver Asian dumpling shop, is opening in Boulder on Pearl Parkway, as well as Maria Empanada, the wonderful Denver empanada shop. So big things coming, and it's about to snow again here, but April 2nd, the Boulder Farmers Market is opening.
Ah, yes, always nice. Now, you know, you give me a list of kind of what you're going to glaze over. There's something that I'm like, oh, what? Lavender, vanilla, goat milk, caramel? Go back to that.
It's a wonderful farm. You know what Cajeta is.
Yes, Cajeta, yes.
Yeah. It's goat milk caramel. Basically, yes. You boil it down or heat it down. And there's a wonderful little farm in Longmont, and they collect goat milk from various places and make this incredible. It's just incredibly delicious. There's actually a bunch of varieties, but the lavender vanilla is a beautiful thing. You know, they go, oh, you can use it on this and you can use it on that. I take a spoonful and put it in my mouth.
All right. Well, on that note, what's in the Nibbles column this week?
It's about my encounters with Julia Child. Early in my career, I met her a few times and hung out with her in Aspen and stuff. And so I write about that and in anticipation of the new documentary coming out. So it's pretty. It was a cool thing.
Can you share us a quick anecdote for those who can't go to your column and at this moment, but want to know?
Well, Julia was what you saw on TV, but in person, she's just much, much taller, very funny, and also incredibly earthy. You know, she sort of gave off a continental, you know, flair and all that stuff, but, you know, in person, she was extremely down to earth, and this new documentary examines some of that. Let's just say she was a passionate person.
Okay, well, what's the best thing you've had to eat this week?
I stopped by Fringe Pizza in Boulder, and it was just wonderful. I didn't have pizza. I had arancini, which are little cheese and corn-filled fried polenta bites, which are just devastating. Oh, they make wonderful crab cakes. I had this incredible Brussels sprout salad, so I was very impressed.
I absolutely blame you for my menu choices last week.
Make you hungry.
Last week you had your guests were talking about macaroni and cheese stuffed egg rolls. I was like, that's what I'm eating tonight. And they're not open on Thursday night, but I ate there on Friday. So,
oh, good. I'm glad you got in there.
It's all your fault.
They're wonderful people.
Yes, it was delicious. Okay, so, and also Fringe Pizza. Fringe Pizza is an underwriter of KGNU, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So support the businesses that support your community radio station. We're going to be asking you to support community radio next week because we're going to be in our fun drive. So if you think you get hungry hearing Radio Nibbles in its standard format.
Yeah, the supersized version that we do twice a year is incredible. Let me tell you, the drive is starting and people are going to tempt you on the air with lots of albums and records and concerts and stuff. Forget all that. Save yourself for next Thursday because we're going to have some incredible food-related thank you gifts when you become a member of KGNU. And becoming a member right now in the current atmosphere, he said. independent sources of information, all that stuff. It is the time to support KGNU.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have for this morning's Morning Magazine. We'll tune back in to Radio Nibbles next week during the fun drive. Save it for the fun drive. It's coming up. We'll see you there. And special thanks to Benita Lee, Kiara DeMare, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Hannah Lee, Myers, Leland, Rucker, John Lindorf, and Rajik Jahan for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to make a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play those messages back Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a locally produced conversation on ethics in algorithms. That's coming up right after these news headlines from the BBC.